you know, I was trying to do animation because I just love animation. I had fallen in love with Rescuers, where Penny was picking up the cat, and just the way that she carried that cat, and it just had so much weight, and it just looked so real. I wanted to do that. That scene for animation and the scene before for story, where he's talking to her about, you know, the bluebird. You can't see it or touch it or wrap it up tight, but it's there just the same, making things turn out right. And just the intensity of emotion between those two, I was drawn to those two scenes. You know, so, you know, that shows my life right there. You know, story, the love of story, and the love of just acting.
Listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate women working in animation, illustration, and comics. In an effort to share their stories, we not only cover the steps they have taken to get to their dream jobs, but also the struggles. We highlight artists, writers, and producers, explore the ups and downs of working in the industry, and discuss female representation behind the scenes and on the screen. Carol Holliday started out pursuing acting and found her way to animation through a chance geek out over Chuck Jones and what she believes to be a calling from God. Having worked on mega hits like The Little Mermaid, A Goofy Movie, Oliver and Company, Prince of Egypt, and TV shows like Sophia the First, and the upcoming Disney Junior show Puppy Dog Pals. Honestly, this barely scrapes the surface of her credits. She's worked from assistant animating to character design to storyboarding and directing. We discuss Carol's career, what she's learned, how Glenn Keane taught her to be more confident, and why animation is such a powerful storytelling medium. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Cassie.
Yeah. Can you, so for those who might not have heard of you, they've definitely seen your work. I'm going to call out A Goofy Movie because it's one of my favorites.
Awesome.
But can you give us a brief, like, introduction to yourself, who you are and what do you do?
Well, my name is Carol Holliday. Obviously, you have me on your show.
Yes.
And I have been in the animation industry for years. Yes, that wasn't a mistake. That was me going, putting my hand in my mouth, going.
So you've been in the industry for a amount of years.
Exactly. Yes, okay. You know it. Okay. I started out as an animating assistant, which is not the same as somebody who is cleans up or in between scenes. It was a training position that Disney had resurrected because of another woman, Ellen Woodbury, who is this very talented sculptor now. But she wanted to find opportunities to be able to train in animation. And so she convinced them to resurrect this old thing where a young novice person who wanted to be an animator would get to be assigned to an older animator who trained them. They would get little scenes, maybe crowd scenes or little teeny tiny scenes that really didn't impact the film, and you could take a while to do it. So I started out there, but I always had a love for story. And my initial reason for wanting to be involved in story was because I wanted to direct. And so very early in my career, I was always going to pitch ideas to the head of development at that time. And he was like, "Do you want a job in story?" And I was like, "No, I'm good in animation." And he's like, "Well, why are you always here?" And I said, because he was going to give me a job in story, you know, and I'm like beating myself in the head now, you know. Yeah. I said, well, because I just want to have good things to work on. He's like, okay. And so that was the road not taken at that point.
Yeah. But what you'll get to later is that it did merge back and did get into story, which is really interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, because I learned later on. And so my career just kind of, you know, I was trying to do animation because I just love animation. I had fallen in love with Rescuers, not Rescuers Down Under, Rescuers, where Penny was picking up the cat, and just the way that she carried that cat, and it just had so much weight, and it just looked so real. I wanted to do that.
You know. Yeah, and that cat was modeled after, I think, Frank Thomas, right?
One of them, either Frank or Ollie.
Yeah,
I'm not
I can't
sure.
remember which yeah. one, but like, I think that's even cooler because I feel like a lot of animators would love to hold that cat, just or love to hold him, just like she was holding the cat. I don't know. Like, thank you.
Maybe I don't know.
Maybe that was a weird thing to say.
No.
But I love that scene is the one that sticks out to you.
Yeah,
that was so cool.
That and it's funny because that scene for animation and the scene before for story, where he's talking to her about, you know, the bluebird. You can't see it or touch it or wrap it up tight, but it's there just the same, making things turn out right. And just the intensity of emotion between those two, I was drawn to those two scenes. You know, so, you know, that shows my life right there. You know, story, the love of story, and the love of just acting. You know, my career kind of, you know, went through that, and I eventually couldn't find anything to do in animation, and so I ended up at Disney TV, I believe it was, and they needed somebody to do like little bumpers for this character called Marsupilami, and it was going to be like, you know, 25 either 5 or 25 second bumpers. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to come up with the ideas. And I was just like, oh, I just want to animate.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine's wife said, well, you know what? Maybe God wants you in story. And I was like, oh, you know, again, you know, fighting what was supposed to be. So I did those. I did the animation. I did the bumpers, the ideas for them as well. And kind of just stayed in that venue for a while. And eventually, you know, because I wanted to, by this point, I wanted to do my own film. It's like, still not wanting to do story, but I wanted to do my own film. Mm-hmm. I was more distracted by that. And eventually one day, Kevin Lima came by and he had seen my designs. I was doing designs for the Little Mermaid TV show. And he'd come by and see my designs and he was like, can you just do a gratis design of Roxanne? Because I want to show it to them and show that you can do the designs. And I was like, sure. So I did the Roxanne that ended up in the film, and they ended up moving me into character design on the Goofy movie. Mm-hmm. And it was working on that in character design and working with Kevin Lima, who is a brilliant storyteller, that I actually began to have an affection for the story process. I got to go to France, worked there for a while, then came back, and Kevin assembled that crew that he had on the Goofy movie, Brian Pimentel, Paul Felix, I can't remember who else right now, and he said that he wanted them to be his story people on Tarzan. And so when Tarzan got moved to feature animation, I got moved over there with them. You know, so I had been at features and then left, and now I was back at features, but this time as a story artist. And that was a wonderful period. It was a little challenging, you know, because, you know, story is kind of a hard process. You know?
Yeah, and it sounds like very smooth transitions, of course, probably in retelling. It obviously sounds that way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you went from, you know, animation to character design to story. Like, how many years are we talking about to have that transition?
I don't remember the transitions in terms of time, but it's funny that you say it was a smooth transition. They weren't necessarily always smooth.
Yeah.
There's always a little bit of hiccups as you're learning each sort of as you're either having to prove yourself in each one of those positions, or having to learn the new position. Mm. You know, for me, telling story is completely different than drawing story. Mm. You know, I learned in that time period what a brilliant storyteller Steven Spielberg is, because he's able to take an imaginary character and make you feel something for them at the end. You know, this is one thing with, you know, with E.T., with this hideous little character that by the end you're like, oh my gosh, I've fallen in love with this troll, you know, to somebody, you know, yeah. To another thing like Oscar Schindler, just doing something as simple as the drink offered three times, you know, the drink offered twice and refused, and the last time I want the drink, you know, to show their relationship change. And then you feel something for these characters. Mm-hmm. But he's making these people up, you know. So I can tell that story, but then to draw it so that it I've actually communicated that story through drawings is a process that you have to learn. And so you know, one of the things that I would say when I was on Tarzan, you know, I was quoting the line from Jerry Maguire, is like, you know, working in story is a day after day, up at dawn, pride swallowing siege. You know, because you have to convince that other person. Actually, you don't even have to convince them. You have to put the pictures in the person's head that's already there. Does that make sense?
Yes, because you're trying to get the director's vision through your hands.
Yeah. So they're not going to draw the picture for you. You have to like make sure that whatever you're conveying resonates with whatever they have in their mind. You know, it might not be the exact image, but I remember, you know, when Kevin handed me the scene for Tarzan in the treehouse, his direction to me was, "You have to make me cry."
Whoa.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, you know. So it took 3 years to get to the point where the scene was the way that it was. So, you know, in terms of like you asked the question, how long do these transitions last? 3 years till I learn how to board that sequence. You know.
Yeah.
So, and it was, and that's, you know, the process of story is a lot longer than animation. You know, I did 5 sequences in Tarzan over the course of 3 years. You know, I would work on something and it would go away, and then I'd work on something else and it would go away, and the other one would come back, and it was all like, you know, so you had to find ways to tell the story, not keep changing things, and also not get stale. And also, you know, be humble enough to accept input from other people. You know, so that has been more of a gradual, you know, over time change. You know, we're all on the same crew, we're all on the same team, and you know, it's just learning to contribute to that team. You know, so it's not going to be an overnight thing. You know, everybody comes in saying, "Well, I have the best idea," you know. And
yeah,
it wasn't until I got to direct Mickey's Twice Upon a Christmas. There was a sequence that I did in there, Donald's Gift, initially. And I got assigned a crew. And, you know, I was assigned these amazingly talented people. And I would give them something to do. And they would be like, okay, before I tell that story, it was funny because when I was working on Tarzan, the head of story one day had given me an assignment. And I went ahead and did it. And I came back. And so he was making notes. And so I was sitting, I was writing everything down that he said, and he said at one point, "Peanuts go good on salads." And I was like, "What?" He says, "I don't know why you're writing it down. You're not going to do what I say anyway." And I realized at that point, it wasn't that I thought his idea was a bad idea. I just thought mine was better. So I was writing it down to mark it down. And in my mind, I was already trying to figure out how to just do what I wanted to do up there. So, you know, fast forward to working on Mickey's Twice Upon a Christmas, I was assigned this really amazing storyboard artist. And I had a scene in mind from, there's a scene in Notting Hill where she's left him, and he's walking, and we do like sort of a transition of the seasons as in this pan.
Oh,
and
it's I love that shot.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, I watched that shot over and over again.
So good.
And so I wanted a shot very similar to that where Donald was getting sort of harassed by this song, you know. Mm-hmm. And the board artist had a better idea. And so he did something not what I wanted. And so, you know, at that point, this was my new transition, was learning to direct somebody and not say, "You idiot, why didn't you do what I told you to do?" It was, okay, how can I get what I need from this person and still validate what he's given me? Because it was good, you know. So, but it just wasn't what I wanted to see. You know, so I said, you know, I totally appreciate that you have all these great ideas, but let me see my idea first to see if it even works. You know, so I realized from dealing with myself in the past and then now being in a position of giving information that, oh, you know, Carol in the past needs to actually be able to speak to this person here in this present, you know, who just had just as many great ideas as I did, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, each, like you said, each transition wasn't necessarily smooth, but each transition happened. You know,
yeah.
And so here I am now. But yeah, so you asked, you know, so that happened, and then I just kind of just kept staying in story, and I've just been just various places working on, you know, mostly at Disney tunes, doing the twos, you know, Bambi 2, Jungle Book 2. I can't remember, Chicken Little 2 that didn't happen. But just, you know, just various opportunities to, you know, keep contributing to the story. And I love that. Brother Bear 2. And all the time still wanting to direct, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's a goal too. But I'm just happy to tell story. And, you know, my favorite stuff in story is just showing sort of the character, the inner world of the character and how they feel and react in that world.
So one of your goals is still to direct.
Yeah.
Was that the only opportunity you had to direct in the past?
Yes, professionally. Eventually, I decided that I was going to just do something on my own. You know, I was not getting the opportunities that I was hoping for in animation. And, you know, one day I was praying about it. I'm a Christian, and I was praying about it. And I realized I'd been trying to network and, you know, work my way into places. And I'm like, you know what? I'm relying on everybody else instead of God and what he's given me. And I had been saving money to redo my kitchen, which was, you know, you know, I had a lot of friends who had nice kitchens. And I thought, well, I want a nice kitchen. And I thought, wait a second, if I stop coveting people's kitchens, I have enough money to do my own film. So I took the money that I had. It wasn't enough to do an animated film. And I thought, I want to direct. And if I'm going to do a short animated film, what's going to end up happening is I'm going to storyboard it, I'm going to animate it, I'm going to color it myself, and I'm not directing. I am just telling a story, which is not a bad thing, but it's not my goal. Mm-hmm. So I decided that I was going to direct a short live-action film. And that was just scary. That was another transition that was like a huge jump.
Yeah.
You know? it was initially, when I had the cinematographer, this amazing cinematographer, Jeff Silgenberg, you know, when he first looked at my stuff that I was getting back, you know, he was like, you know, this is good. You can use this to get into AFI. And I was like, okay, I can use this to get into AFI. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm already cooked. Why do I need to go to school anymore? You know? Uh-huh. And so by the end of the time that we got, you know, we did all the shooting and I edited the first rough, he was like, no, you can direct. You know, you don't need to go to school for this. My animation background translated into live action. In that particular case, I wish I'd had an editor. It would have been a better, I think, thing if somebody else had come in and it wasn't me 100% of the time. You know, you need other... Once again, it's you need other people filling in for your life.
Yeah.
Filling into your process. You know, but like, yeah, I love this concept of transitions. You know, you mentioned the transitions, and that's, you know, something that I would say to ladies or men or anybody is to not be frustrated with the time it takes to learn the things, but to just keep moving through them, to be faithful through them. Because, you know, like you look at like the transitions of like a butterfly, it's this little thing that's trying to live as a bug, a little tiny squishy thing just trying to live, and hopefully... I'm remembering, as a matter of fact, I had a butterfly plant, and I found a monarch butterfly sitting on the plant, not a butterfly, monarch caterpillar sitting on the plant, and I would go out and watch him every day. He just, like, he delighted me. And one day I went out, and he was gone. because he apparently delighted a bird, you know. So you know, there are transitions. There's that little caterpillar that has to fight to live on that plant, and then one day it like crawls into something and it becomes like this hardened little gross looking thing. So it goes from this being maybe this beautiful little caterpillar to this hardened gross thing to being a butterfly that has to fight to come out of that hardened thing. There's like all these transitions, but each place has a beauty in the before the transition or right after the transition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't be afraid of the tough, you know, in your places, you know. So, because you'll be like Heimlich, you'll become a beautiful butterfly. You know?
Right.
So that is, you know, I directed that and you know, I'm just doing boards. So, and enjoying it.
So, because you've been in the industry so long, I'm going to ask you this question because animation is obviously getting better with more women coming in than ever before and going to school to learn it. But, you know, back in the day, it was definitely a boys' club. There weren't as many women, and they didn't have as many opportunities, some of them. I was wondering what your experience was.
I never really saw it boy club-ish. It just was. You know, I went to school with some very, very talented young women. We kind of were together. But the thing was, is the boys were our friends. You know, I think often we can focus on the negative aspect of you know, men versus women. But I think just being friends with one another, you know, I might be naive. You know, because I had such wonderful guys in my life, you know, Don Hall, you know, Paul Felix, Glenn Keane, all of these people who were Steve Anderson, these people who were Tony Fucilli, talented men that I learned from, who also considered me a friend and, you know, protected me. You know, I recall at one point there was this wasn't even a guy thing. This was just a jerk thing, you know. I was at Disney Features, and some guy walked up to me, and he said there was like a fruit plate, and this is going to be a negative story, but it's not a negative art story, you know.
Okay.
It was a fruit plate, and I was taking some watermelon, and he said, "Try not to live within your culture." And I said,
"What?"
Referencing, I'm black, by the way. I'm referencing my blackness. And I said, I just looked at him appalled. And he said, "My friends think I say inappropriate things." And I said, "And they're your friends," meaning I don't know you. You know, I didn't know who this guy was. So I went back and I was talking to Don Hall, and he and the other guys were like, "Where's this guy? We're going to go talk to him." I was like, I had like three big brothers who were going to go, you know, have a word with this man. And I was all like, no, it's okay. You know, so, you know, I learned like one of the greatest lessons in confidence from Glenn Keane. You know, I was assigned to be his animating assistant on The Little Mermaid. And right after I got that, had that happen, you know, I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm working for Glenn Keane!" And I went into his office, and I would go stand in the corner. There was a corner and a bookshelf, and I would wedge myself in that corner. And he was like, "Go out and come in here like you belong here," you know.
Wow.
And one day we were going to lunch, and he told this story of like when he was in high school or college. No, high school. He was in high school. You know, he was this, you know, football player, stocky football player, if I remember correctly, and he was going out with this this girl, and he asked her, why are you going out with me? It's a really pretty girl. Why are you going out with me?" And she said, "Because you know how to enter a room," you know. And he was constantly somebody who was teaching me confidence, teaching me, you know, just, you know, if I give you something, then it's because I want you to do it. And if you don't have confidence, I'm going to have to redo it myself, you know. And I was just all like, okay, you know, I'm going to fake it till I can actually do it.
Right.
And so there's so many men in my life who have taught me great things. So I can't, you know, speak to like, I mean, that might be other people's experiences. You know, so I'm not negating that where they've had negative experiences with men. But I know that I've had positive ones.
Totally. I think that's the majority, quite honestly. I think where it gets kind of hairy is, you know, there's not a lot of women in leadership roles, mm-hmm. like directing and above. Mm-hmm. Again, it's getting better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've heard stories that are negative, but mm-hmm. I'm really so happy that we have so many more positive stories uh-huh, that can uh-huh. hopefully just kind of like...
Yeah.
Encourage others to not be negative. I guess I don't know.
Well, I mean, but like I said, people have had their experiences, so I don't want to, take away from anybody's experience if they've had, a negative thing happen. I just know that God has been very gracious to me in, these wonderful people. I mean, Jeff, who I mentioned before, my cinematographer, I've learned so much from him, and he was younger than me,
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where I would say to him, through the course of the process, I'd be like, I just like you so much. And he'd be like, thank you. He didn't know what to do with that,
Yeah.
And so finally we worked together for, I think, 6 months. And by the time we shot and everything, we were returning all the equipment. And, I said to him, I just like you so much. And he's like, thank you. I like you too. So that's been my experience. And I think if we just, there are differences between men and women. And I think if we just embrace where we are within that process, and stop trying to demand, that people change who they are,
mm-hmm.
And just accept who we are, I think it becomes a lot easier to work with each other.
So while we're on the topic of representation behind the scenes, mm-hmm. how do you feel about on the screen? Like in terms of, because there's a lot of shows and movies that are kind of, they don't want to put female characters, like as the sole character mm-hmm. out there. Mm-hmm. They say they don't do as well. Mm. Do you have any opinions on that?
No.
Because one thing, you were saying that you designed Roxanne from a Goofy movie earlier. I really loved her design. Like, you just don't see female characters in films or, animated films especially, that, like, are kind... She was fit and very mm-hmm. average, but she wasn't like tiny and gorgeous. She was really, she was super cute, very like girl next door in like an actual way, like reality way. So, I mean, what was your process in designing her? I'm just curious.
I really can't say because it's been so long.
It's okay.
I know. I mean, part of it is funny is that I had just come off working, like I said, on the Little Mermaid TV show. Mm-hmm. So if you look at her hair, it's Ariel's hair.
I've thought that before.
Yeah, it's Ariel's hair. And I work with high school kids, so I'm kind of familiar with high school bodies. So I think I was kind of emulating that. Mm-hmm. There was a character at one point that got downgraded to just a, a background character. There were actually two characters. There was like mm-hmm. there was a guy who's like a big old jock, and then there was like this blonde person, and they were like, the jock had his underpants sticking out of his pants because back then, there were kids walking around with their underpants sticking out of their pants.
Right. Yeah.
This wasn't pants on the ground days. This was before that,
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the Marky Mark days, I think, when he was like, but that was more about showing that he was super cool, because only the super cool kids had their underpants sticking out of their pants. It was just like dumb, you know? Sorry, I shouldn't be saying something negative about dumb practices that kids do.
You be you.
Yeah. But he was the cool kid. So I wanted, and he was at that point vying for Roxanne. He, like I said, that character got taken out now. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, I was finding things in high school kids that I knew or observed and putting them in those characters. And so Roxanne was just a copy of all the high school kids that I knew. And also resonated with Kevin, because if you look at a lot of Kevin's designs in the Goofy movie, the women tend to be a little more hippier, you know. So he prefers the designs to be pushed in that direction, too.
Yeah, so. Especially like when they started going on the road trip through what I assume like the Midwest, you start seeing a lot more body shapes, too.
Yeah.
And like
yeah, they were just so cartoony and caricatured, and it was pretty cool, because, like, I remember people like that from the Midwest, so it was so authentic, and I think that definitely plays into why I loved it so much.
Yeah, and those actually, a lot of those were not my designs. Those were somebody else's. I can't remember who they did it, but that shows the director's vision, you know, because he was consistent in, you know, having the characters be a little bit more normal body shaped or even pushed, but not in a offensive way, you know, so.
That's good.
Yeah.
So, in mentioning the Little Mermaid TV show, I just remembered, I don't remember the character's name, but isn't there a character on one of the mermaids that uses sign language to communicate?
Yeah. I cannot remember her name either.
I can't remember her name, but someone was telling me that that was a character for real, and I was like, oh my god, that's amazing. Yeah. Like, were you a part of the creation of her?
I designed her. I designed her, yeah. Gabriella. Yeah, and she was patterned after a little girl who loved The Little Mermaid who had some kind of life-threatening disease. And she was little. She was either 4 or 3 or something like that. And her parents, you know, somehow got a hold of, you know, the people and said, oh, my daughter loves The Little Mermaid. And so they decided they wanted to do a character design. The girl was hearing. She could hear. But they wanted to do something to represent, you know, somebody who had something they had to overcome, you know, to sort of inspire this little girl. So they gave her, they made her hearing impaired. So not only did I design her, she was a little Latino looking character, Little Mermaid, and because the little girl, I believe, was Latino. I also, because I animated, I got to animate a few sign language-y things just to show how it would look if a character was signing.
Right.
So, yeah.
Did you have to do, like, the hand chart for, like, as, like, a mouth chart instead you did a hand
chart? Well, it wasn't like a hand chart. I don't know what happened once I did that 1 or 2 scenes. It just kind of, bye, it's gone.
They probably gave it to someone else to figure out based on your designs. Yeah. That happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing. I think that's so cool because it seems like decisions like that aren't really made because of time reasons and how crazy, especially TV schedules are. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's the perfect example is that you could do it if you wanted. And of course, if the story is needed and stuff. But I feel like sometimes you just have to be a little bit more thoughtful when creating, like, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think that's so amazing. Yeah. And I think I would love to see what the parents and little girl thought after seeing it.
I know. I don't remember.
I just, because I got my start in the Disney parks drawing down there.
Okay.
And, like, people bought, like, the listeners would probably hear me tell this, like, a million times. But, like, people would buy these Disney characters and we'd draw them for them and, like, write, like, happy birthday or doing the colors they want. Sometimes we change, like, Ariel's hair to be brown because the little girl's hair was brown. So, like, they always bought this out of, like, love for the character because it reminded them of someone.
Yeah.
Or because they saw themselves in there. And I think that's typically why you're drawn to certain characters.
Yeah.
So it was really amazing to learn that. I just love seeing how, like, it's particularly animation affects people. It feels like it sticks with them longer than, like, live action does.
Yeah, I can see that. Because it's, you know, ultimately, the stories in animation are so much more simple. So I think the more simple the idea, the easier it is for it to remain. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, also, it's because with live action, they don't typically, like, pour over it as much as you do in, like, a feature film animation.
Yeah.
It just, like you said, it took, like, 3 years to do, like, 5 sequences very thoroughly and going over and over. So, like, they really pour over it in animation. In live action, they do, but not in the way that animation does. It's very detailed-oriented.
Yeah, it's very detailed. And let me see if I can explain this a little bit better in terms of, you know, there's the stories they tell in live action can be so multi-layered because you're dealing with actual people who can actually convey real subtle emotion. Mm-hmm. There was a scene in Joe versus the Volcano, which was the first time I realized, oh my goodness, there is a real difference between animation and live action, where Meg Ryan is talking to Joe. I'm sorry, I'm a little hormonal right now, so... Inky Pant Girls, crying right now. where she's talking to Joe about, you know, Joe's quest is to figure out what he's doing with his life, you know. And she's talking to him about believing in herself. You know, Joe is like, do you believe in God? Do you believe in... And she just, like, goes into this long thing about believing in herself. She had nothing outside of herself. But it was a slow truck in to Meg Ryan's face as she's standing by the door saying this. And at the end, I think she just turns off the light and leaves. But you couldn't do that with an animated character because there was just little things that was going on in her face. And you could just, like, rest on that face and not be bored by the image that was up there because it was alive. You know, with animation, it's a drawing. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how amazing your story is, you gotta cut away because eventually that drawing is gonna die. You know, and when I say die, it's gonna lose interest for you. Right. So, so live action stories can be more complex. Okay. Animation stories are growing more complex, but The ones that so far have stuck with you have a basic story of a boy and his dad do not get along. The dad's like, let's make this better by going on a road trip. And the boy has to deal with the fact that he lied to his best, the girl that he's in love with, about going, you know, not going with his dad.
Yeah.
He's going to go to a concert. That's a simple story.
That's true.
You know, so I think that's why those things stick and they resonate a little bit more, so that you have the payoff of I love you, Dad, I love you, son, and oh my goodness, I get to see Powerline, you know? So
I have to say, the Powerline concert was one of the best payoffs, I think, in an animated film. Uh-huh. Like, it just feels so good that both problems worked out.
Yeah.
So good. The song's great.
Yeah.
We're talking too much about a goofy movie. I love it so much.
I know. That's, yeah.
So, you mentioned God and being, mm-hmm. you know, religious mm-hmm. A few times now, and that's a big part of your life. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, because I've met a lot of people in the industry that are atheists, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that's ever became an issue for you in trying to network or connect with other people in the industry?
I wouldn't know. I have, of course, like I said, every transition's challenging. And the way that I look at it is, even if there has been some issues, there's a story, an account in the Old Testament of Joseph. You know, people might know Joseph from the musical Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where Joseph was this guy that he had 11 other brothers, and his father liked him the best.
Yeah.
And gave him this awesome coat. Well, he also had dreams that one day the brothers would bow down to him. And the brothers were like, we are not having any of that. So they attempted to kill him. And then one of the brothers intervened and said, well, why don't we just sell him into slavery? No, don't kill him. Just knock him in the head and leave him in a hole, you know, intending to rescue him later.
Okay.
And so then he left, and while he was gone, the other brothers, not the, like, 10 of them, not the youngest one, said, why don't we just sell him into slavery? And it's like, great idea, let's sell our brother into slavery. So he just goes through various things where things just get worse and worse. A woman lies on him, says that he tried to rape her. You know, he gets thrown into jail. You know, it's just like all this horrible stuff until he eventually becomes basically the second in command of Egypt. And at one point, you know, here he is. He's gone from 17 years old to, I believe, he's 40 now. You know, God had done these amazing things to bring him through these horrible transitions, and now he's here, and his brothers come to him because there's a famine everywhere, and they come and they're looking for food, and they don't recognize him, and they're all bowing before him, and he's all like, this is my dream, you know. And so they ended up reuniting. His father's like, I thought you were dead, and you know, everybody's happy. Israel moves to Egypt, and when his father dies, the brothers come up to him and they're like, you know, dad said, don't be mad at us, you know, because they're terrified that once dad's gone, that, you know, Joseph's gonna, you know, kill him.
Right.
And Joseph's words are my attitude. You know, you meant this for evil, but God meant it for good to save you. You know, so not saying that I am there to save anybody, but I see any sort of conflict that comes out of my faith as God using it for my good or somebody else's good. I mean, because ultimately, God wants me to be like Jesus. So everything that happens to me, good or bad, is helping me go in that direction. Does that answer that question?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that's a great way of thinking about it. Mm-hmm. There's so much goodness in, you know, the Bible.
Yeah.
And those stories, like, if anyone's ever, like, I want to tell a story, but I don't know what I should do, like, go look for it.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. That's a good question, by the way.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't know. There's been some crude people that I've met, and they're nice people, but, man, their humor can be crude, and, like, their thoughts, and it's like, whoa. So it's like, how do they get along with, you know, someone who's, like, you know, outwardly religious? Because I think a lot of people are religious, they just don't talk about it as much.
Right.
They don't see themselves, like, as a vessel like you do, you know?
Yeah, I got into animation because I became a Christian.
Really?
Yeah, I was in theater. You know, I wanted to be a Broadway actress. I wanted to be a musical actress.
Yeah.
And when I became a Christian, I was concerned I would have to compromise too much of what I believed, you know. So I went to the head of the department in animation. I was going to CalArts. And I said to him, I literally said to him, I said, God wants me in animation. And he said, but you can't draw. And I said, well, God wants me in animation, you know. And so he sent me away. He had me, you know, go do quick sketches. And so this went on for about 3 weeks. I would come and bring something once a week. And finally he said, well, you still can't draw, but we'll let you in on your enthusiasm. And actually, he didn't say that to me. I always tell that story to shortcut it. He said it to a guy who then told me that. So, but... you know, in my mind at that point, I said, see, God wanted me in animation, you know, so I feel like my entire career is because of him. So I always want to, you know, trust him with whatever happens in the midst of it, good or bad, you know.
What was the moment that, because, you know, you felt that God wanted you in animation before you went to talk to, you know, the guy, but like, what was the moment? Like, did it come to you just when you were sitting in rehearsal for a play at school, or what happened?
I had been, like I said, I'd been in theater, I was in acting, and, you know, the people that I was acting with were, like, you know, amazing superstars. I mean, Don Cheadle was in my class.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they were just, like, these amazing people. I had gone to high school with Nicolas Cage, you know, so everybody that I knew was succeeding. And I had two things sort of happen. Well, the first thing was, well, okay, yes, I also had friends who were in animation as well. And I would go visit them. And one day I was talking to this one guy, and he asked me how my day was, and I told him, and then I asked him how his day was, and he said that he'd seen Chuck Jones. And I was like, oh, you saw Chuck Jones? And he's like, you know who Chuck Jones is? I said, yeah, Chuck Jones. He has the Grinch eyes. He drew the Grinch. He drew the Tom and Jerry with the Grinch eyes. And he's like, get out of acting. There is no reason why you should know who that is. And I was all like, oh, don't be silly, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that happened. And then at the end of that year, I got put on academic probation, which meant that I had talent but no focus.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, all these people in my life who are superstars and getting, what do you call them, scholarships, And I was on academic probation, you know.
Yeah.
And so I just said, you know what? I'm going to do whatever it takes to succeed. I will literally sell my soul to the devil if I have to. And I meant it.
What?
Yeah, I was very dramatic, you know.
Yeah.
But at that point, I felt like I was dying. You know, I was just terrified all the time. And I was working at Magic Mountain, which has nothing to do with being terrified, but I was working at Magic Mountain at that time. And there was this one kid there who turned out he was a Christian. And he was really nice and very non-judgmental. And I just watched him. And one day he was late back from break. And I don't have to tell that part of the story, but anyway, I just watched him. I just realized I was going to explain. It was going to need too much explanation. But I watched him, and something that he did—not even something that he said, but just something a part of his life—just impressed on me that I had needed to go to church. So he didn't say anything. He was just blithely living his life, you know.
Mm.
So I went to church that weekend, and the pastor was talking in his sermon, and basically he said there are people who are divided, and Christ wants to put you together. And so I was like, that's me. You know, I knew the person I was on the inside. And I knew the person that I was trying to project to the world. And I went to him and I just, you know, I said, I want to be saved. I want Christ to put me together,
mm-hmm.
you know. And at that point, you know, I got my sins forgiven and my life completely changed. And I was so in love with Jesus. I didn't want to lose that. So like I said, I'd always performed, and I loved singing, and I thought, well, that's involved in animation, you know?
Yeah.
So CalArts had an animation department, so like I said, I went to them, but he was like, but you can't draw, you know? So, yeah. And so that was kind of how that happened.
Like, what good do you think animation brings into the world?
That's a really good question. Story. I think because it's simple, you know, they tend to be almost like moral tales, you know, animation tends to be more moral, you know, one of my movies that affected me when it first came out, sorry again, was Incredibles,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, I love that story because it's a family story, you know,
yeah.
where you've got these people who sort of just kind of fractured and sort of lost their lives. You know, they're kind of going off in all these different directions. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, this is taking so long. Just, you know, I wasn't a superhero person. And it was just like, there was a lot of beating up things and breaking things and whatnot. And I was almost a little bit disconnected from it. You know, there were moments, you know, like, you know, when she's falling out of the airplane and she's trying to collect her children. But it wasn't moving to me. But when they've flown the Winnebago back to wherever it is, I don't know if it's actually New York, but the New York style city.
Yeah.
And they're having this argument outside of, you know, waiting to go, you know, deal with the villain. Up until that point, I had really enjoyed the acting, you know, mm-hmm. the character stuff that was between all of them. But he says, you know, she's yelling at him, like, you can't do this on your own. And he says, I just can't lose you again. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm crying. You know, it was like all of that disconnectedness came together at that one point, you know. And so I think, you know, the beauty of animation is that it can tell such simple moral tales. And I'm not talking in terms of telling you how to live, but just almost like Aesop's fables. You know, just like, I got to get in here and tell you something that will just, like, make an impact on you so that you remember it, you know. And so I think that is the good that animation can provide. And, you know, whether I would do an animated film or a live action film, that's still the story I want to tell. You know, even my short live action film was told with an animation sensibility where it was just, you know, a father wants to connect with his daughter. There wasn't like really crazy layers, you know, mm-hmm. in there. It was just like a dad comes home from the war. He all he wants to see is this little girl,
And the little girl, this was back in the day when they were gone for, like, years. It wasn't like, I mean, granted, they're gone now 18 months or so, and that's still a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's gone for 3 years of this little girl's life, going from infancy to, you know, she's born, and then he shows up, and she's three. And in his mind, this was the child with the 10 fingers and the toes, and he was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a dad. And he's missed most, he's missed her learning how to walk, he's missed her learning how to talk, he's missed all of these things. But he's just like, if I can live, you know, go back to see her. And then he goes to see her, and she's all like, I want nothing to do with you because you're a horrifying man.
Yikes.
You know, and then at the end of the story, they're all cuddled up together in bed together, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but that's very simple, just short little thing. And so, you know, I love that aspect of animation, is that it can be very simple and boiled down, so that people are moved by it.
Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, they are simple, but it's still so deep,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You're a very passionate person. It's very obvious mm-hmm. from, like, talking about animation today with you, but what passion projects do you have on the side right now?
Well, my biggest thing right now is I've written a book called The Food Ain't the Problem, and that came out of, it's another one of those scenarios, like, I got into animation because, you know, I became a Christian. Well, the book came out of the fact that I realized, if I'm a Christian, nothing should be controlling me but God. And at the time, I was, well, for most of my life, I was overweight. And so it got to the point where I was 312 pounds, and God was saying, this needs to stop, you know. It wasn't the weight that was the problem, you know. So in this time period when everybody's, like, concerned about being fat-shamed, you know, it's like, you know, being overweight wasn't the problem. My love for food was. My over love for food, you know. So I said, okay, God, you're right. I don't want anything else controlling me but you. And so, you know, I've been on so many diets. I'd lost, you know, like, you know, I joked and said I've lost like 400 or 500 pounds, you know, just yeah. over and over again, you know. And I said, there's so many things that tell you what not to eat. You know, I'm just going to trust that everything that you made is okay, and I'm just going to go ahead and eat it, but just less of it. And in the first 3 months, not doing any exercise, just eating, and eating hamburgers, french fries, and pizza, and ice cream, and cake, just less of it, I lost 30 pounds. And I was like, wait a second. So God is not, like, trying to squish me and make me, like, you are a horrible person. He's like, no, I love you. I gave you taste buds that make food taste good. Just don't worship the food, you know. So that made me fall in love with him more. You know, a lot of people think that God is this ogre. He is king, and he is God, and he wants people to obey him. And he still is a father as well to those who come to him. So I just started blogging about that relationship with God and losing weight. And so after, I think I lost about 140 pounds, my friends were like, you should write a book. And I said, you should make work for your own self. and so eventually, you know, enough people said it that I went ahead and wrote it. And they were like, and you should illustrate it. And I said, and again, you should make work for your own self. And it became, I realized at that point that, you know, I am an artist as well, you know. I am not, at that time I was thinking I wasn't a writer, I'm a blogger, sort of. That's one thing, but why not use, you know, what God made me to be, you know, artist. And that actually encouraged me as well. It's like, God could use somebody like me, a cartoonist and not a theologian, to talk about this wonderful God. You know, so that became this entire project. And last October, when I sort of put it all together and I had met a woman who was a typesetter, and she sent me the first several pages of my book, I was like, oh, it's an actual real book, you know. And then, you know, another friend of mine, like, said, your title is wrong for your book and you should come up with a new cover. And I was like, why are you making work for me? You know, and it was just all of these things. Just once again, the lessons that I learned in animation in terms of telling a good story,
being able to appeal to other people played into this, and not having pride. You know, it's just like, you know what? I want this to appeal to as many people as I possibly can, either Christian or non-Christian. Mm-hmm. So if you're saying something is not communicating, I'm going to fix this right now, because this is not about me. It's about the message, mm-hmm. you know. So by the time I got the actual book in my hands and I looked at it, I was like, I was amazed, not because I was amazing, but because I was used, you know. So that's my passion right now is just trying to get the message out there, you know, the food ain't the problem. And, you know, just I love that God could use someone like me, you know, with my cartoons and Bible at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Where can people find out more about, you know, your book?
They can find it on Amazon. Looking up The Food Ain't the Problem. There's also a Facebook page for it, The Food Ain't the Problem. And It Ain't the Food is on Instagram. I guess you'll probably write that in there.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, because that would the Food Ain't the Problem is just like one letter too long to be its own.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
So while we're wrapping up, mm-hmm. what advice would you give to young women getting into the industry or like in their first couple years of working professionally?
It's a lot different than when I got into the industry because you have the internet. And even if it is challenging getting in, keep producing art. Build your own audience. You know, if you're not getting where you want to be immediately, make an audience for yourself. I have a friend, Jessica Morris, who is this talented artist. And she's, you know, I've known her since she was 15 years old. And she's now in her mid-20s. And she's doing an online, what do you call these things?
Web comic?
A web comic.
Graphic novel?
Yeah, a graphic novel called The Griffin's Eye. And she uploads, you know, once a week or so. And, you know, you can find it online. I mean, she's just amazing. You know, so don't wait for people to give you the opportunity. You can make your own opportunities nowadays. It's almost like the Wild West when people were, you know, traveling from, you know, Russia to Oklahoma to, you know, to start a new life, you know.
Yeah.
Except, you know, your new life is on the internet. And even if you don't necessarily build like a huge audience there, if you're always making art, you're always getting better, you know? And so then eventually you have a lot of things to show like companies where they're like, oh, you know, you actually can produce things. You know, I went on a job interview once where, you know, they had flown me out someplace and I had all this Disney stuff in my portfolio.
Uh-huh.
And the head of story guy, you know, I've been laughing with everybody else, and the head of story guy came in, and he was looking through my stuff, and I could tell he was not impressed with me, even though I had all of this really, you know, wonderful artwork, and somebody else had said, wow, your drawings are actually intimidating. He said, do you have anything that isn't Disney? Now, I was too timid to tell him I was working on a live-action film. I should have at that point.
Yeah.
But I said no. He's like, no blogs, no nothing. And I said, no. And that was to my detriment, you know. So just be making art. Doesn't matter if people hire you immediately for it. Make art, you know. And don't take no. When I say don't take no, I don't mean don't be rebellious. Just if you get a no, work some more and then come back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And where can people find you online?
Let me, one thing, and just, you know, the other thing, and to, you know, I mentioned something about, you know, I mentioned my friend Jessica that I've known since she was 15.
Right.
You know, her father, you know, said to me at one point, thank you so much for mentoring Jessica. And by this point, I think Jessica and I had been, you know, she was like in her early 20s, and so we've been friends forever, you know, and I was like, mentoring? I thought we were just friends, you know. And I think, you know, we place, it's good to get mentors, but I think we're looking for people, we make it so formal that we can't find somebody,
You know, it's like you find like the highest person that you can and you say, would you please mentor me? And that person might be super duper busy. And they're like, you know, I don't have time. Good luck. Yeah. You know, I met Jessica because her dad was the first Native American into outer space. He was an astronaut.
That's amazing.
Yes. And so he was going on a tour through Disney, and he brought his two daughters with him. And she drew, and she wanted to go into animation, and I just liked her, you know? So we kept in touch, you know, over the years. And I would send her, like, little drawings or, like, send her to websites or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she would email me every now and again. And as time went on and she got older, she'd be like, how much do I ask for? No, she'd say, I got this job doing, you know, this illustration stuff. And I'd be like, how much are you charging for that? Well, I'm charging this. And I'm like, Jessica, that's not enough money, you know? And so then I started, like, you know, finding out how she should get paid things. And at one point, she was coming out to meet somebody at she had met somebody that I knew. And she wanted to get an internship. And I said, you should ask this guy. And she's like, I can do that? And I was like, I was going to say, like, silly. And then I thought, wait a minute, she's 21. She doesn't know that, you know? So over the course of the years, I don't think Jessica would say that I was mentoring her either. She would just say that we're friends, you know? And so, you know, don't underestimate just becoming friends with somebody who's a little bit above you. You know, don't necessarily have to shoot for the president of a company. Mm-hmm. You know, find somebody who's just doing your job and, you know, just ask them to show you what they do. You know, and a friendship might grow out of that. They can just go on. Don't force it if it's not there. But, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Where can people find you online?
The best place to find me would be, you know, via The Food Ain't the Problem. Those are that's the way I'm most accessible.
Yeah. You're very active there right now.
Yeah, very active there right now.
Like recently came out.
Yeah. And, you know, you can also find my website online that just has, like, you know, drawings, my portfolio, basically. Mm-hmm. That is not as live as The Food Ain't the Problem, but at least you can contact me in either of those places.
Yeah. Is it like carolholiday.com?
It's actually, oh, that's funny. Thank you for asking that, because it's not carolholiday.com.
Okay.
It is CrowdedMetroFilms.com. Yes, www.CrowdedMetroFilms.com.
Cool.
Yeah, because that was the name of my company.
Yeah.
When I did my live action film.
That's cool. I've noticed that some people, like, instead of using their name for their portfolios, they do come up with kind of, like, you know, a branded, like, company kind of name.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's helped you in any way? Like, does it make you seem more professional?
I don't know, to be honest. I see nowadays they're saying that you should be your own brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier. You asked, is it CarolHoliday.com? It's easier to find you if you're CarolHoliday.com.
Yes.
So that's probably, you know, to keep it simpler, more simple. Mm-hmm. I think they'll even say that on Facebook. You know, like if you write a book and have a Facebook page, have it be you and not the book. You
right.
Know? So, but I didn't do that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Sure
again,
thing.
This was a really amazing conversation.
Yeah, I really had fun, and you asked great questions too.
Thank you. You're I'm really welcome. Interested.
Oh, cool. I can tell.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. It helps us reach a wider audience and share these stories. In sharing these female voices, we strive not only to help pave a path for aspiring women professionals, but to build a community and safe space for female creatives to support and empower one another. Like life, working in these industries is not a destination, but a journey of hopping from project to project, so I think we can probably all use the support. Want to chat? We're on Twitter at Ink, the letter N, Pink Girls, on Facebook at Ink and Pink Girls Podcast, or email us at inkandpaintgirlspodcast@gmail.com. The Ink and Paint Girls Podcast is brought to you by me, creator and host Cassie Soliday, and produced by Val Patrone in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by TV's Kyle. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Bank Girls podcast. Thanks for tuning in.